Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with a Professor, and we're pleased to be joined by Chris Long. And, you know, it's interesting when you have football families, and football families have great stories. I know had great conversations with the Matthews family and that, and, of course, the Long family. So, and I go back far enough that I covered your dad, Howie Long, in being able to, when he was with the Raiders and all that, and always enjoyed those Raider-Steeler games because I was on the Steeler beat at that time. What's it like growing up in a football family?
It's cool. I mean, you know, to me, he was always just my dad, and he made a point. My parents, you know, Howie and Diane, made a point of just raising me like I was a regular kid, because that's what I was. And, you know, football was his job, and he didn't want to make it seem any more special than anybody else's job. But, you know, there was a good side and a bad side to that approach, because I certainly had a lot of opportunities to meet some pretty awesome players and people, but I didn't understand the significance of it, because I thought, it's just work for dad. It's not a big deal. It's Bo Jackson. Big deal. I kind of hit an age where I kind of realized the gravity of everything. I think it was around the time he got in the Hall of Fame, but he was done playing, and I'm very proud of him. He's helped me and guided me along the way a lot, guided my brother Kyle and my youngest brother Howie, who works for the Raiders, you know, along the way. And we didn't get into football on purpose, but it certainly happened that way.
Like, when did you get into football?
Well, I played three or four sports in college, that would be pretty special, in high school. You know, I always really liked baseball the most, but as I started to get stronger and I couldn't hit the curveball, my baseball career kind of plateaued, and I just steered towards football about 15, 16 years old. And I wasn't very good in middle school or early on in high school. I was kind of a late bloomer, and, you know, when I realized that I started getting my first offer from Virginia, I thought, all right, I might be pretty good, and that was the home team. So growing up in Charlottesville, Virginia, I took that offer and committed early, and that was all she wrote.
Because, again, a lot of people may not remember how great your dad was. I mean, they see him on TV every week during the season, but how great was he? Because, I mean, again, he was one of the more fun players and one of the better players I've ever covered.
Yeah, well, I mean, his stats were great. I mean, he's in the 80s for sacks, 13 years. Bunch of Pro Bowls, six or eight of them, and he played on some great teams. He has a ring, and I think he made the people around him better. I think he was one of those players that was more disruptive than statistically impressive, and that was still crazy because he had great stats, but he was a guy that really wrecked game plans, and I've heard plenty of anecdotal stories from coaches talking about they're not going to let Howie Long beat him, and he beat him anyways. You know, they focus on him all game long, and he was just so quick off the ball, understood football, understood leverage, and was more versatile than people remember. I think a lot of younger people think he was a DN, but he was really all over the place. He lined up anywhere, lined up over the nose and a three on the edge, and he was more disruptive than anything, and I respect that about his game because he played 100 miles an hour.
Would the comparable for players now, would J.J. Watt be a comparable to what your dad was? Now, again, his Hall of Fame career. But
I think J.J.'s versatility would make the discussion worthy of having. And obviously J.J., I think, is a Hall of Famer, you know, and they're their own players in their own rights. But, you know, built differently, maybe slightly different strengths, but you know, I think whereas J.J. is more of a lateral player, my dad was a straight line. You know, he's going to get 3 yards deep faster than the ball can get in the quarterback's hands type player. And I'm not saying anyone was better, but the comparison is that they're very disruptive and they play 100 miles an hour and they play all over the line. And I think that's pretty unique.
And it just seems like their personalities were very similar because, I mean, J.J., loves the game. Your dad loved the game, and I mean, it almost kind of showed in the way that they played every play how much they loved the game of football.
Well, I think they both have a great passion for the game. I think certainly, you know, I think JJ's probably a lot more at this point in his life, a lot more media savvy, and my dad was a little bit more rough around the edges, but they certainly both. They both love the game and play very hard, if you turn on the tape, it's fun to watch J.J. Watt play. And I know when I go back and watch film of my dad, it's just fun to watch him play. There's a lot of great players that have played in this league, and I think the best compliment you can give somebody as a football player is you just enjoy turning on the tape and watching them. And when we see a great player on D-line, whatever D-line meeting room we're in, you know, for the room to just say, man, this guy's fun to watch. And that's what happens when you turn on a JJ or if you flip on some old Howie Long film. You know, I like watching a lot of old players play, and that film's a lot of fun to watch. The game was different, and players played a little differently, but it's football.
No doubt. How was he different as a father coming home, or did he always just have the same type of personality in dealing with things?
You know, I think he was enthralled in what he was doing. You know, I think he'll be the first to tell you he's enjoyed life after football a lot. You know, I think he was coming from such a desperate place, you know, and, you know, coming out of Villanova, not thinking anybody thought much of him, and, you know, playing for his life, and, you know, that's kind of where his mindset was. And then when football ended, he's able to kind of step back and relax and become, you know, actually a pretty funny guy with a great sense of humor. So as it's been fun over the years to watch him kind of mellow out. And, you know, any football player will tell you you're just in a different mind frame when you're playing. And then as guys retire, they tell you they're able to calm down, and that's kind of been his trajectory.
As a father, as a football father, how active was he? Was he one that was hands-on, or did he kind of let you grow on your own?
Well, he was a little bit of both. I think he was definitely hands-on in that, you know, he was a great coach to me when I wanted the help. But when he'd come and coach at my high school or at middle school, he would definitely try to stand off to the side and not garner too much attention and, you know, help me out from a distance and let me breathe a little. And also, he never pushed me towards football. Him and my mom actually didn't want me to play football. And if you ask him, they'll tell you a story about they thought I was, when I was like 8 or 9, when I first came out for football, they said they weren't going to deny it because then I'd want to go play more. So they let me go play, and they figured I'd come home the first day and think it was too hard. They thought I was a wimp. It just turned out different, and once I decided on what you decide to do, I'll be proud of you. But you're doing, do it 100 miles an hour, and that's kind of the way went about things.
Well, and it seems like on the football field, I mean, again, you know, a little bit different in the styles, but the persona of what you do is very similar to him. I mean, I thought it was funny when you came out of school. I mean, there was that label. It's like, oh, and again, it was a positive label, but he's more of that five technique defensive end, and as opposed to Howie, who was kind of all over the place.
Yeah. Well, when I came out, because, you know, I played at Virginia, and we played a true 3-4, you know, where I was lined up in a 4-I, like a JJ with a lot less freedom and less talent. But, you know, I would rush the edge on third down. So it kind of gave me a chance to learn different things. And, you know, that was a blessing and a curse because there were a lot of edge rushers who that's all they did in college. First, second, third down, they were out on the edge. And for me, I was in a 4-I a lot of my snaps. So it took a year and a half to adjust to that kind of edge rushing all the time, you know, 4-3, true 4-3 style of play. But that sort of stuff has served me well over my career. You know, when I came in the league, we played, you know, Steve Spagnuolo's defense. Well, I mean, Hazlitt was a short stop there. Then Spagnuolo, where I was head up on tight ends a lot in 9 techniques, comes along where I'm first and second down in 4-I's again and rushing on third down outside and then go to New England and I'm playing inside and out. So it's come full circle and now I'm back on the edge. But it's a lot of fun to play all over the place.
Do you have an adjustable rate mortgage that is about to increase? Or first and second mortgage that you would like to combine into one? Low mortgage payment? Hey, give Keel Mortgage a call today. They are local, friendly, and have been serving families up and down the West Coast for over 3 decades. With interest rates forecasted to rise, the best time to explore your options is now. It starts with a phone call to 1-888-778-KIEL or online at keelmortgage.com. That's Keel Mortgage, 888-778-KIEL. They can help. CL 53969. You talked about how you kind of nudged your way into football and kind of went against the grain and then had such a great career. How surprised were you that your brother was into football?
Kyle, anything Kyle has done since he was a baby, he's picked it up with ease, and he's just so talented, and he's just that kind of guy that anything he touches turns to gold. So, you know, he was a otherworldly baseball player. I mean, he got drafted by the White Sox in the 30-something round. I think it took him a while just because he was kind of rough around the edges. I mean, he was a lefty that threw in the 90s and could hit the ball a mile, but I thought that was where he was headed, and then he just decided one day, I think I'll try this football thing. When he had left Florida State when he was playing baseball there and went to a junior college in California, and was like, I think I'll go out for the team. And, you know, first round pick, couple Pro Bowls, really has become a dominant player in the league. And, you know, he's athletic. He's fun to watch. He's a tough kid. And I've really enjoyed him growing up. And watching that process, and I'm very proud of him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think more people he thought he was going to stay in baseball and not into football.
Well, I certainly would have. That's a nice lifestyle.
Yeah, but the pay's not too good in the initial years.
And the money's guaranteed, right?
Well, yeah, but it takes you like 8 years to get that.
Yeah, but
you have to go through 6 years till you get arbitration, all your arbitration things done, and that means you have to keep advancing and get major league experience.
Yeah, well, I know my body would feel a lot better if I was a lefty that was thrown in the 90s. So if I was Kyle, I would have gone the other way, but I guess the football force was too strong.
Hey, curiously, I mean, do you ever get some baseball games going when Kyle, your dad, and everybody's around and other people in the area?
No, well, we used to play when we were kids, like we'd call it lawn ball, and that was with a tennis ball and a baseball bat, and there was a line of trees that we'd just play like 3-on-3 with the kids in the neighborhood, and Kyle could just hit the ball over the second line of trees, so there was no doubt about it. And we used to be up here in Montana, and we just hit rocks in the lake, and Kyle's rocks would just go, you know, 50 yards out of the water when we were barely clearing the dock. And he just was always, he had that natural swing. Like a lot of kids, his hero was like Ken Griffey Jr. So he kind of modeled his swing after him. And he did I wouldn't tell him this. I hope he's not listening because he'll blow his head up. But he actually looked a lot like a big, less polished Ken Griffey Jr.
Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah. And I know it was kind of interesting that all of a sudden he slipped into football and became so good.
Yeah, well, like I said, he's always been a kid that just picks things up really naturally. And, you know, he could learn a new sport in a day. Myself, it's been a grind, and just, you know, football's been a lifelong thing trying to figure it out, and I'll be figuring it out until the day I retire. And you know, any sport I've ever tried to pick up, I was the kid. Kyle would be like, "Man, you suck at that sport. Like, why are you such a slow learner?" And he just picks things up with ease. So he's a guy I aspire to be like.
What was it like for you? Because, again, you were the mainstay on Ram teams that unfortunately didn't get over the top and didn't get to the playoffs. And then all of a sudden you get the chance to go to New England and you get the Super Bowl. What was that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a wild turn of events. I think, you know, certainly anybody who comes to New England as a free agent, really anybody who's playing with Tom, should just be very thankful. You know, it's such a blessing the situation that kind of created there over the years with that continuity and that way they do things. You know, to come there as a free agent, I was very thankful. I would have been thankful had I come from any team, but, you know, make no bones about it. Everybody contributes to that Super Bowl, but, you know, Tom is straw that stirs the drink. So I just am very appreciative of being there and getting the chance to spend a year with those guys. And, you know, St. Louis was a chapter in my career that it was a noble effort, right? And, you know, I know you paid attention to the NFC West a lot. We always were tough, and we played with physicality but couldn't get over the hump, and we'd play, you know, the Seattles of the world really well, or San Francisco, the Harbaugh San Francisco's really well. We played them as good as anybody. I mean, it was like a bloodbath, some of those games. You know, 2-3 field goals, two overtimes, or an overtime type of thing. And, that was it. Defensive struggles and a lot of fun. But I'm really still bummed we didn't get over the hump because I really enjoyed my time in St. Louis. We had a lot of great patient fans, and I miss that chapter of football for sure. I miss those guys in that D-line room. We had something special. We just couldn't get quite over the hump.
Yeah, because I thought it was going to make the turn. I mean, I thought Sam Bradford was going to be good, and you had Laurinaitis right on behind you at linebacker. Pretty good defensive players, a very good scheme, and all of a sudden just it never got over the top.
Well, I mean, and I've played in New England and won a Super Bowl, and I loved it there. I would put up with any time period in my career getting to go to work with that group on defense and those guys that we were so close. And we really did give it, our best shot. And I think the turning point for that regime in that era was, Sam was playing really well in preseason that one year and was about to make that next step. I mean, everybody sees how accurate he is and he can put the ball on a rope anywhere. He's had issues where people haven't been able to protect him, but if you can protect that guy, he can be pretty special. And that was where we were headed. And, one freak play in preseason the year after he tore his ACL in Carolina, and the writing was kind of on the wall. You build and build and build as a football team, but you need every break you can get, and we didn't get the breaks.
What is it about a Jeff Fisher team that does so well against division teams? Because that's the one thing is that, the team, even if it didn't have the same talent against when San Francisco was at its best or Seattle was at its best, they always did well against those teams. What does he do that works so well in division games?
Well, I think it was the right division for Fish in division. I mean, Fish, one thing Fish's teams are going to do is play physical. When we had Greg Williams there on defense, and Greg wasn't there the whole time that Fish was there, but, we played that physical type of defense and we tried to pound the ball on offense. And when we had the right pieces, it was working pretty well. And Fish, that's his bread and butter, and that was a physical division. I mean, that couple year period there, where you had your Alex Smith and Kaepernick, Frank Gore, that big O-line in San Francisco, Seattle, obviously with Marshawn, the physicality, Tom Cable type stuff, and our defense. I would just enjoy going back and watching some of those matchups, and just kind of peel my eyes back and watch and, pretty physical football and fun to watch. I can't remember as physical a little time period in division in quite a while.
Final football question before we start talking about water boys. Why aren't you back in New England? And why are you in Philadelphia?
Well, I mean, for me it was simple. It was like, hey, if I want to play anymore, I had a great time there. I loved it. Got a chance to be a part of that thing. I don't know if they would have had me back. I mean, I played a ton in the regular season. I was more of a third down guy in postseason. But I wanted to get back to playing 4-3 attack defense if I was going to keep playing, at 32 years old. So, last year I played a lot inside as a three technique on first and second down. I enjoyed that. It was different. I'm best with my hand in the dirt. That's what I did most of my career. And at a certain point, it's like, I got to be able to put something on tape that I'm very proud of. And I was proud of what I did last year and contributed to that team. And whatever I was asked to do, I did. But, I want to be proud of, if I'm going to keep going, I want to be proud of, the end zone tape that I'm able to put on film.
Okay, now, I know a lot of football players do great things for charity, very creative things, like Cliff Averill, for example. He builds homes with number of sacks he gets for down in Haiti. You have a great cause, too, and it's interesting because you did this, and it's over in Africa, and it's called Water Boys. It's part of the Chris Long Foundations. Talk about what that is and what's going on.
Yeah, well, definitely, and Cliff's awesome. He's a great guy, and he's doing great work. We've certainly tracked what Cliff's done because it's fun to kind of learn from other great players in the league that are doing just as good things off the field. We've been doing this for a couple years now. We started this thing called Water Boys, which is kind of a network of NFL players and influencers that's raising money for clean water wells in Africa, in Tanzania. We've brought on, retired players, active players as kind of a community to spread awareness and educate people on the clean water crisis. And, we have so much here in the United States. We not only use water at a, ridiculously high click, but we also have great access for the most part to clean drinking water. And you can see how disastrous life without it is when you have something like a Flint, and so it's very relevant. It's a problem we're all going to have to face at some point in the future. Water conservation, protecting our watersheds, but also just providing clean drinking water for people who don't have it. And that's most of sub-Saharan Africa, much of it, the people do not have clean water. So we funded 23 wells, 19 of which are already completed. We've got 69,000 people already drinking water from our wells. We've raised over $1.3 million. And we're $10,000 from funding well 24. And we've had 26 active players involved. So our goal is 32 wells for 32 teams. And you can learn more about it if you're listening by going and checking out waterboys.org. And it's something that, as great as playing football in the NFL is, this has been just as rewarding. And I've been so excited to get involved with it.
And it really came as just a vision. So you're climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and you're up there looking, and you're struck by the beauty of things. And so what vision came into your eyes, and what did you see, and how did you come all out of this?
Well, so when Jeff Fisher first got to St. Louis, I had seen that him and Teddy Bruschi had gone up with some wounded warriors to climb Kilimanjaro, and it was something on my radar screen. And I came up to Coach Fish in his office, and I was like, hey, dude, I'm thinking about, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. What do you think about that? He's like, I think it's great. He's like, when are you thinking about doing it? I was like, in the off season. He's like, okay. Like, I don't think he was very excited about that, but I went anyways with a former teammate of mine, James Hall, and we went and spent like a week there, and not only had a great climb, but just such a beautiful experience, meeting wonderful people, and was struck by, the disparity in what we have and what folks in East Africa don't have in Tanzania, specifically where I was. And, I just wanted to be a good traveler, and I was kind of coming to a point where I wanted to start my foundation. And I said, I need to hurry up and get behind something, because your career is only so long. And truth is, when you retire, less people care about your cause. So I was struck by it. It was kind of a perfect storm. And I kind of by accident got hooked into clean water. I was in a bar in Arusha, Tanzania, and Joe Buck walks in, and this is so random because, right, he's a St. Louis guy, and we're halfway around the world, and he tells me what he's there for, and that's a clean water project, and kind of introed me. And I went home, and I thought about it, and, I just said, hey, let's do this. I think it could be a flagship cause. The NFL has so much potential to get behind something like this, a crisis that's saving lives and healing sick children by giving them clean water, and so many transformed communities as a result of what we're able to do. So we're very lucky.
So let's get that 10,000 to get that 20th well done and then start working on the last 12. It's waterboys.org. Check that out. Chris Long, thank you so much, and keep going the good cause, and good luck in Philadelphia.
Hey, thanks a lot, John. Talk to you soon.
Okay.